Back with this session together, after talking to a lot of people around the village who seemingly had a lot of the same questions about where they were going and what they were doing in it. And this session will be centered a bit about vocational choice. We're not giving you a whole chance necessarily during this 2 hours to design the rest of your life, but rather just a little taste of what some planning might be for your life. And so the purpose for this, I've listed on the sheet here, the purpose of this session is to learn a bit about what I do well and enjoy, or what my central core is. And we'll talk some more about central core as we go along. And there's a plan here, which I will go over with you briefly, divided into two sections. The first hour is what we call the old way of finding a vocation. We'll be doing some history work. We'll count some jobs. We'll have a personal story. We'll do some personal reflection, share with another person and then with the group, and then have a short break. That's our first hour. Second hour, what we call a better way. We'll have an outline of a better approach from Richard Boll's book, which we'll describe shortly. We'll do some reflection on dreaming, some reflection on what I want to be, do with my life, share some of that, discuss with the group, and then we'll end with an evaluation. Okay? Does that sound satisfactory? If there's anybody in the group that's in the wrong room, then now's your chance to leave, or anybody wants to bag out, this is the time, although there will be other opportunities. First thing I'd like to do is ask you to reflect for a moment about how many jobs you've had in your life. I'd like to have you take a minute here and count up all of the jobs you've had. And I define job as anything you've done at which you've made some money. Anything. So let's take a moment.
Can you invalidate housewives?
Well, that's a good point. We're not trying to invalidate housewives here. I'm just determining that that's helpful at this point, at least to define a job in that way. Okay? Let's define jobs.
And you're talking
count,
about
count on your fingers, if you would, for a moment, or your toes, if necessary, if you have that many jobs.
Oh, man. Jobs or kinds of jobs?
One day. Anything you've made. I've had one day jobs. That's a job. Picking strawberries is a job. Do you make money at it? Okay, what'd you come up with for a number?
Oh, I couldn't finish counting.
Okay. Where did you stop counting?
Well, I got through five, two or three times. I kept forgetting. Which ones did I already say?
Okay, how about you?
Four.
All right. Dixie?
I got about eight.
Eight, all right.
Close to ten.
Ten, all right.
And 16. 16,
okay.
Nine.
Nine?
I can roll eight by scraping.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Six.
Oh.
Six, but four actually in the same
position. Uh-huh. Oh. Five. What's the half?
Well, both of them were receptionists, but they were receptionists and something else.
I guess. Okay. Something five and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, two.
Two? Right. Four?
Twelve,
but they're somewhat related. Okay.
Yeah, I think mine is something like 12.
Richard Boll, who does this often with seminars, comes up with an average number of 15. That's common. 15 is common. Perhaps in a slightly older age group than you have here, maybe not.
What age level is that?
That's possibly a little older, but that's what he comes up with as an average throughout all of his sessions. My last count was 22, I think. We're going to talk about how jobs are usually found. I want to describe the old way of finding a vocation, and there are still people who counsel that this is the way to do it. And certainly there's more of us that tend to do this by accident, if not by design. The old way of finding a job. Number one, remain vague about what you want to do. Don't be too specific. Walk into an employer and say, I'll do anything you've got for me to do. I'm flexible. Okay. Number two, spend a lot of time looking for organizations that might be interested in you, no matter where they are. In other words, the old theory is the employer always has the upper hand, and you're the poor job seeker trying to get a break, right? That's the old way. Number three, the theory that employers only see people who write well. In other words, send out hundreds of resumes. The counselors who work this numbers game tell us that we need to send out on an average 1,000 resumes to get a job by the sheer bulk of paperwork process, the old way of finding a job. Okay? And the fourth step is settle for anything, almost. That's the old way. Okay. Now let's get some facts up. These are true facts about what the system works like, or what it doesn't work like, rather. First of all, resumes. Only 2 to 5 out of every 100 resumes sent out result in an interview. Okay.
And that may not be a job.
And that is only maybe 1 time out of 5 that's going to result in a job for you, on the average. So you start talking about how many resumes you're going to have to send out. Employment agencies. Employment agencies place only 4% of those entering the job market, and maybe only 15% of those changing jobs. 4%. Not too good batting average. Want ads. A survey was done in San Francisco recently. 85% of the companies surveyed never hired anybody within the year using want ads. How about the United States Employment Service? They have a 20% placement rate. That means 80% failure. 80% of the people they place do not stay on the job beyond the first 6 months.
I thought that 80% meant they didn't find a job for 80%
of the people. No, that's a failure rate, total. The result, most jobs are found by direct contact, and one person's estimate is that 80% of the people in this country are underemployed. That's mean underemployed means doing less than they could be doing or less than they want to be doing. 80%, this person estimates. And Thoreau said a long time ago, most men and women lead lives of quiet desperation. They're underemployed is another way of saying the same thing. Okay? That's what I think the old way is. That's what Richard Bowles and others say the old way is. Okay? I'll tell you a personal story, then do some personal reflection. Yeah.
Who's doing the jobs that these 80% of people want? In other words, there must be 80% potential vacancy rate.
Yeah, although I think there's probably some...
Probably is not true.
Probably some cross-switching. There's probably people doing jobs that other people would like to have and vice versa. You know, I know I've been in places where I would gladly have switched places with someone else, but I didn't have the courage, gumption, or whatever it takes to do it. You know, I'm not sure that it's all of us are on a depressed level in that same sense. I think some of us are, a lot of us are just not really where we function best. Does that answer the question? Does that hit home with any of us? We could function better if we were in a place where we enjoyed our work better and did well, or did better at it. We're after that, I think. Okay. I'll tell a personal story, and then we'll do some personal reflection. A little about my own story. I wanted to be an engineer when I was in high school. I don't know exactly why, except it seemed like a high status deal, and I was pretty good at math. So I went into college becoming into the physics program and into math program and into engineering, basically. And somehow didn't really catch hold, never really did too well at it, never really got very excited about it at all. And then during summers I would have summer jobs, often working in the apple orchards around where I grew up, and had a life-changing experience one Monday morning when I was up at the top of an apple tree, and I don't know if any of you have ever thinned apples. It is a terrible job. One Monday morning I was up there picking these little apples off and realized what I was doing was trying to raise money while I was there to pay for a sports car which I was buying so that I'd be popular with all the girls, right? Doing this terrible job to do this. And I realized that Monday morning that this was rather dumb to do something you hate, buy something to use on your time off. So I quit. And by complete accident, got into a whole different line of work. What happened was I went home and there was a note on the refrigerator at my parents' home from my mother, from a lady, regarding a phone call from a lady, and to this day I don't know how she got my name, but the note said, call Mrs. So-and-so, she wants to give you a job as a counselor at a summer camp. I didn't know what a counselor was, so I called her up. When do I start? Tomorrow. All right, I'll be there. I fell in love with 60 little boys and found that I had an incredible attraction for working with young people. So consequently, to make a long story short, I went into teaching the senior year of college, got straight A's, did very well, loved what I was doing. It was a totally by accident change, right? A lot of things after that. Basically, what happened was I didn't catch on in my head that I need to do what I love and enjoy. And I still later
Tried to do things that in maybe the world's eyes were good jobs. I was an electrician, I was a refrigeration technician. What else? Went to law school, did a lot of other things. But in between times, what I was doing was working with kids in the church, I counseled at a summer camp, I even managed a summer camp, I started a teen center when I was 19 years old, I spent 3 years working on that. What happened was, I suddenly realized in a flash of brilliance that maybe I ought to go do what I love instead of doing what somebody else said I ought to do. So what I did was I went to a church and convinced a group of people running the church that a bunch of us, including some bunch of high school kids, wanted to start a youth center. Spent 3 years doing it. Had the best years of my life. Absolutely loved every day. Got up every morning, could hardly wait for the day to happen. Put in 14, 16-hour days, never felt it. Super experience. What I learned was, although I didn't fully understand it even at that time, you've got to do what you enjoy, do well, and really love. And that's the most important thing. Right? We're going to be talking a bit about that. My development has been largely by accident in terms of getting in the right place, but recently have learned something about planning, and we're going to talk a bit about that the second half. Right now, I would like you to reflect, if you would, for the next 10 minutes, on your own personal career development. And I want you to define, if you would, career very broadly. I don't necessarily mean what the New York, I don't want you to define career narrowly as an employment counselor might define career. I want you to talk about or think about your life in terms of how you spend your time, where you spend your time, the types of things you do. I'm going to define career that way. If you would, take 10 minutes and think about your own career, and in particular, concentrate on where you've made changes, major changes in your life, how those changes have been made, whether by chance or by planning, by choice. Okay? Would you take 10 minutes and reflect? Write your paper there is to help jot some notes about your career, what you've done and how you've made changes. Okay? And then we'll share it with one other person. Share what you wish. Your notes are, of course, personal, and your thoughts are personal, but I'd like to encourage you now to share what you wish with one other person. I find that usually works best if you share with someone you do not know too well. And I would ask you then for the next 10 minutes to find one other person you don't know too well and share a bit about your own process in your life, and particularly how your changes have been made. I've noticed in the past it being helpful to share with a whole group, to hear a bit about each other's stories, without going into great detail, but a bit about each other's stories, and in particular, how our decisions are made, by choice, by chance, by planning, by accident. Okay. So rather than going around the room, I'm going to just ask for anybody that would like to share a bit about their own story, what they shared with their partner, what they thought on their own. So, anybody like to share a bit? What has your career been like?
I sort of had a two-pronged development all through my careers so far. I back in high school, I considered going into the ministry, and the advice at that time, as it was all the way through college and such, was always have another vocation handy, too, particularly being from New England, where the Lutherans are too many. And I've gone through a business education undergrad degree and worked in business and really enjoyed that, and then decided to go through seminary and really enjoyed that. Just completed my internship and see that I don't want to be a full-time pastor, but I like to do a lot of the stuff that would happen in that, as well as a lot of the stuff that would happen in business. So now, 10 years after high school graduation, I can see a little bit more of what I want to do. And at the same time that a lot of doors have closed along the way, I can see that each of those doors that I've gone through and closed have been very helpful in bringing me to this point and looking at what is ahead and, you know, focusing direction to pull together avocation and vocation to a package.
You have some idea of what you like, part of the pastoring type of work you like. Your process has been opening and closing some doors, and it sounds like happy where you are right now. Okay.
Do you have a job right now?
I'm going to complete a master's degree at the seminary this fall, and then again, I've got another part-time job. That's how I have 16 jobs. And then I'll be intentional in looking for full-time employment come spring. But that's, at this point, where my wrestling is lying, is focusing on that.
Have you thought of the college or the seminary or someplace like that to work, doing your business work and get your knowledge of what it means to be a pastor will be helpful?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. Thanks.
Aha. Okay, we'll work on that a bit on the second half. Maybe do some dreaming. Okay, anybody else, briefly?
I think a lot of people have the desire to work with people. You know, they want to be people-oriented, and they feel that they'll get a lot of satisfaction out of working with people. I think that when people say this, they don't really know what they mean. They just look around and say, I want to work with people, they're nice. I can get along with people. I've got that sort of personality. And finally, in my case, I didn't start with wanting to work with people particularly. I was more interested in things, and I went through something like yourself. I went through the engineering side and became an engineer. And but even then, after a number of years in the engineering side of engineering, I decided I would still wanted to work with people. So about 10 years ago, I had the opportunity more or less thrust upon me to maintain my... I'm a Boeing man, and Boeing got very sick there about 10 years ago. So there was a number of us hanging on by our fingernails, and to make a job change was obviously beneficial at the time if you could do, particularly in the area of engineering, which was going down like a rock. So I switched to... I always figured I'd like to work with people, and teaching appealed to me. So the opportunity came along to become an instructor, working with customers of Boeing, and still on the engineering side, maintenance engineering, which I did. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. I thought, well, that was a smart thing, and it was. For one thing, I maintained employment. But I have found now, this is 10 years later, and I've worked with people quite extensively. Now I'm getting a little fed up with people. Because there's always this, if you work with people now, I'm talking about the customer type of relationship that you have to have if you work for a company. And this is something that I'm just throwing out, that in the end, that idea of working with people, which seems so great, can, in time, become a little old. Mm-hmm. So maybe one should consider that over the longer run.
Mm-hmm. You've looked at how well you like to work with things, and how well you like to work with people. You've made a change from things to people to some extent, although I realize most jobs involve elements of all. Mm-hmm. And you found that in the case of working with people, that's not all it's cracked up to be for you.
Well, you get to a point where you're now beginning to wonder, well, maybe there's the things, you know. But
maybe back to the things. Right? We're going to talk a bit about that in the second half. All skills can be defined as those which involve data, people, and things. you've anticipated our second half very well. Mm-hmm. And each of us needs to look at the skills we have and the interests we have working with data, people, and things. I have a friend, you may say, most of us want to work with people, or at least we say. I have a friend whose favorite job, when he was a Boeing man, is working with data. And they put him in a corner for 10 years with a calculator and a computer, and he loves his job. Each person's different. Okay, anybody else?
I think I can identify him a bit. I'm a registered nurse. I worked and identified kids, so I was kind of in limbo for a while, and then I registered in a nursing home and in a large hospital, and then I retired, and my husband died. I have to work, and I don't want to. So as far as attitude of mine, I did take tests, and I kind of like to be with people. I don't want to sit at I don't like book work. I don't like to write my bills. I don't want to do my insurance and all that kind of stuff. I'm working in a nursing home at the present time. I have to work holidays, shifts, nights, and I feel I've done that. And I don't want that. I work 4 day Thanksgiving, 4 day Christmas, Easter, Mother's Day, every holiday I worked it. And I'm a little bit fed up with people in this staff area that 16-year-old age that have never taken orders, and they won't take orders from me. They don't show up. They call in sick every holiday, every weekend. We are sure to help. We need help, and we are fast.
Okay. So where you are is a place that you don't like very much. Okay. For a number of reasons. The people there, the type of work, you're basically doing your job out of sheer necessity, as you see now.
I have to work.
Okay. Let's do a little dreaming on the second half. Maybe we can spark up some interest or something you might want to do to change. Anybody else?
To pick up from her nursing home, as a 16-year-old, my first job was in a nursing home as an aide.
Did you work for her?
But I would still be there had the pay been good enough that when I had a child and was put into a single-parent situation after a divorce, I could have stayed there. It came to the point where it just didn't pay enough, and I had to go out and find something else. And the reason I like nursing homes so well is I could leave my father, all the problems were left outside. When I walked through those double glass doors and they closed behind me, I was there for 8 hours, and I was for those people. And I really felt needed and wanted and appreciated. And then I left it, and it still draws to my throat because I really enjoyed that. But I like what I'm doing now. I still work with people, but I've never, because of income, been able to get back into a really situation like that.
When you quit your job, why don't you apply for it?
I had a nurse. Just an aide. But in all the different nursing homes I worked in, I worked in one in Minnesota that was church run. It was Lutheran. And there was such a difference in the people. I mean, they offered to pay my way 4 years to school to be an RN if I would give them 4 years of service when I completed. And at the time I was married and we were moving on, and if I didn't know my marriage was going to end within a year later, but I wasn't strong enough at the time and didn't know what the future brought. But maybe a church affiliated.
I am a Bethel Lutheran home for the aged, but I have not been a Christian community, which I
would like. Okay. I heard what you're saying. I've been teaching high school for 12 years, and it's always been great to close the doors in the classroom with your kids, have a great time. And that worked very well for me until I started having, until my wife decided she wanted to separate. And then I started taking out all the things that were failings outside of the classroom and inside too. And so I didn't have a very good semester last year in terms of keeping the momentum going, kind of playing, you know, a surface role, but I didn't feel the same genuine enthusiasm for it that I had for the previous 11 and a half semesters. I guess I'm at a point now where I'm saying, okay, I've got to look at, did I really enjoy teaching for what it was, or did I like it for some other reason, and do I want to go back to that, or do I want to go some other direction based on my experiences?
Okay, I think it would be helpful to continue this, but we're going to run out of time and not get to the second half, which I think very much important to get to. I'd like to take a couple minute break here and let's stretch and walk around the room, whatever you need to do.
Go on, Robert.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
You start people talking and it's hard to stop. The second half is based partially on this book called What Color Is Your Parachute? This is by Richard Bowles. It's regarded as one of the new wave, I guess you'd say, of employment counseling devices. We're going to outline a bit about what he suggests, and we're going to do a bit of what he suggests for determining where you're going with your life. I wanted to share a little bit more of my own story to put this in context. About a year and a half ago, I was here at Holden for the winter program. I was here for 2.5 months, and one of the main things I did was put together a course on this book, and in particular, study on my own, about my own career and where I was going, what I liked to do, what my interests and skills were. I learned incredibly that the skills that I now have, I have had since I was a young child. Bowles says your skills are carried through with you and are used in different ways and in different means throughout your entire life. They're developed, manifested in different ways, but you have them from youngest childhood. What I found out, and I want to give you a little hint of this in our session today, what I found out was that I was basically doing at age 7 and at age 10 and 17 and 19 and so on, the same as what I'm doing now. That when I was happiest, most alive, most in touch with myself, most being who I am and who I'm called to be. To give you a quick example, when I was 7, I was organizing a tent theater in the backyard. I remember that as one of the high points of my childhood. Tibby Plughoff was given the popcorn concession, and we charged 3 cents admission, and we rented films downtown and put posters on all the tree posts. When I was 10, I was organizing clubhouses, and we had codes and secret entrance ways, and the neighborhood kids were all teamed off and so on like that. When I was 19, during summer vacation, as I mentioned earlier, I was putting together a youth center. I spent actually 3 summers in this dream, organizing people, helping get a place, equipment, help, money, all that sort of thing. I took a number of other high times in my life, analyzed them, and I found the same kinds of skills being carried forth. When I organized the youth center was another high time. What I came up with was very clear. When I analyzed seven times in my life when I was most happy, enjoying what I was doing, feeling most alive, and being most what I was called to be, amazing. The skills were almost identical all the way through. What my central core is, what I do well and enjoy, is organize, promote, develop, counsel, scrounge resources, help people meet their needs, help people chase dreams. That's what I do well. I've been doing that since I was age 7. I will do that well, I'm sure, all my life. Okay? This helped me. That's my little testimony about what color is your parachute and how it can work for you. I want to outline what the process is, and then we'll just do a taste of it today. This is a better way, and this is Richard Bowles' approach. He suggests this is a better way of determining where you're going with your life. Rather than by accident, let's find out what your central core is, and let's plan based on that. Number one, learn your goals, your life's mission. We'll do a bit of that today. Number two, inventory your skills, what you do well and enjoy. He has a very complete system of inventorying skills. The skills I listed for you, scrounging, organizing, promoting, developing, counseling, those are amongst 200 or so he lists, and he has you analyze them by very structured means. If you're interested in that, you can follow up in this book. Number three, determine what fields use your skills best. And don't necessarily narrow your thinking to just nursing or whatever, okay? Number four, determine what time spans are built into your decisions. In other words, okay, if I'm going to do this and this, I've got to go to school for 2 years and so on and so forth. Determine what time spans are involved. Number five, determine where you would enjoy working. And it comes down very strong on this. Don't let the employer have the upper hand. You go find where you want to live. I, for example, like living in Chelan. I live there. I work in California. I have a business there. I commute. I'm being where I want. I don't care what the world says about that being impossible. Number six, research organizations that might use your skills. Go out interviewing employers. Don't let them interview you. He has a very systematic way of going out and looking for and researching institutions, organizations that might be able to use your skill. You have the upper hand when you are interviewing them, all right? Finally, focus on a few organizations. Determine or find that person, the one person, and usually not the personnel officer, find that person who can hire you and explain how you can help solve his or her problem. That is the way Bowles suggests finding a job, a career. That's quite a program. He suggests taking 2 months to do it. 2 months, you might say. That's a long time to look for your career. But he says we often will spend more than that stumbling around aimlessly looking for anything. A bit about our goals or our life's mission. We're going to do some dreaming. And I want to say a few things about what dreaming can do and how important it is. To me, this is an earth-shaking sentence. It changed my whole thinking about how decisions are made. He said, your interests, wishes, and happiness determine what you actually do well more than your intelligence, aptitudes, or skills do. Let me say that again. Your interests, wishes, and happiness determine what you actually do well more than your intelligence, aptitudes, or skills do. To me, that flies in the face of everything I was brought up with. I was told you could take a test on your aptitudes, or your intelligence would determine where you go, and that sort of thing. Bowles said no. The studies have shown that your interests, your wishes, and your happiness are far more determinative of how well you do. He says maybe the word feelings or wishes sounds a little erratic in your ears. Okay, he says, let's borrow a word from biology. You ever heard of the word tropism? Tropism. That's what a living creature instinctively goes toward or away from. Tropism is what a creature goes towards or away from. Man is no exception. And in addition, each of us has his own personal tropisms. He says, you must know. What do you feel drawn toward? What do you instinctively go away from? Your tropisms are more important than your intelligence, aptitudes, or skills. He says, if you do work you really enjoy and at the highest level you can legitimately claim, you are bound to do an outstanding job and be of genuine help to others. And, he says, no tests or other instruments have been devised yet that measure what you want so effectively as just asking you what you want. Despite several decades of research, the most efficient way to predict vocational choice is to simply ask the person what he wants to do. The best devices we have, other than asking, do not exceed the predictive value of just asking. Dreams. Most of us have our visions and dream our dreams. It's only when we come to our job and what we want to do with the rest of our lives that we think our visions and dreams must be shelved. In career planning, there is a certain group of professionals here and there who love to play the game of getting you to say just what you want, what you wish, and then bringing you down to earth by saying, now let's get realistic. You ever heard that before? All right. What they should have asked is, are you sure this is what you really want? Because if it is, chances are you'll find a way to do it. He says, remember the man who was called the great imposter? Whatever he wanted to do badly, I think we've all heard that story, he found a way to do it. Bowles says, never mind being realistic. He says, for every person who overdreams, that is, dreams of doing more than his merits would justify, there are four of us who underdream and sell ourselves short. For most of us, the threat is underdreaming. And if you believe the comment, 80% of us are underemployed as a result. He says, you're not going to do this task well if you keep one eye fixed on what you think the job market is. How's that for a catch? Don't we all do that? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll never get to be a teacher. There are too many teachers. He says, granted, you may not be able to find a job that has all that you wish, but why not aim for it and then settle for less if and only if you find you simply have to. Don't foreclose the matter prematurely. Don't close the door too early. That's wishing and dreaming. I want to do a little bit of that today. First, just briefly, I'd like to ask you to think about what you always wanted to be since you were the littlest kid. What you want to be. Think about what the different stages of your life produced in terms of what you wanted to be. For me, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be Sky King and fly around in a twin-engine airplane and save people. Then I wanted to be an architect, and I wanted to be an engineer. Okay, you've heard a lot of the rest of the story. Okay, let's go back into your youngest childhood and think about what you wanted to be, and then jot down notes about what those stages were. Let's take a couple minutes and do that, and we'll share it. What did you want to be? What did you always want to be? Anybody?
I wasn't sure when I was in my... I was thinking back and it was like up to 10 or up to 12. I didn't really want to be anything. I mean, I wanted to be a cowboy or... my standard response, if anybody asked me what I wanted to be, because big people were always asking me what you wanted to be, so they wanted to hear something substantial, so I used to say electrical engineer. Somebody told me that was kind of a nice thing to be.
Good.
And I didn't have any real idea what I wanted to be until I was old. And then I wanted to be a pilot when I was about 14.
Anybody else?
I always wanted to be a nurse. And then after I'd gone through confirmation, it switched from a regular old nurse to a medical missionary. Because they sent out all kinds of neat information from Valparaiso. Mm. And then when things weren't going that way, it switched, and now it would be like to go to LBI and be youth director and really work with kids, teenagers.
Anybody else? Dixie, I'm going to call on you. You have a grin on your face. You must have something interesting.
Well, I wanted to be the greatest female writer of the century.
Writer or writer?
Writer. Literary genius. Or a civil court pianist. No, concert pianist. Or the mad scientist. Mm-hmm. At various times, I attained all those.
Okay. Great. Anybody else?
Would you believe all I wanted was to be on the farm with a bunch of horses?
Yeah, I hope he doesn't do that.
Be what? Well, the happiest year I can remember of being a kid was the mowing alfalfa place in the summer with the old two horses and the old kind of mower.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be a ranger, you know, that would be good out in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was wanting to drive a train.
I always wanted to go to college and be a research person.
We reflected a bit on what we wanted to do as a young child. The next 15 minutes, we'd like to reflect on our dreams. I'd like to think now, if we could, an answer to
one of these two questions down here, if you can read them.
The things I want to do before I die, or on the last day of my life, what must I have done or been so that my life would have been satisfied to me? The things I want to do before I die, or on the last day of my life, what must I have done or been so that my life would have been satisfying to me? I'll share a bit of my own. I want someday to be able to sell enough property to buy a 40-foot boat and sail in the South Sea. I have an 18-footer now, and I've met the Johnson boys who were here at Holden last week, and I'm going to go over on the coast with them and sail a little bit. And I now have a dress of somebody living in Tahiti, and I'll call him, I hope. Another dream is I want to be able to develop enough income property so I won't have to work most of the year, and I'll be able to volunteer a lot of my time in church work and social work and a lot of the other kinds of things I like to do. Those are a couple of dreams for me. So I'd like to you to reflect now, if you would, for about 15 minutes on your own dreams. What do you want to do before you die?
Can you manage a family with those kind of dreams?
That's each person's decision. Let's think about that independently, okay? I don't want to get too much into my own story right now. List. Note the things that you have yet to be done, the to-be-done items. Omit the things that you have accomplished, okay? Then from your list, prioritize your dreams. Put them in order. Which is the most important to you? In a second, and so on. Number three, note whether each item is affected by your environment, by yourself, or by someone else. Is your dream affected by your environment, by yourself, or by someone else? Note that. Okay? And finally, note the steps necessary to accomplish your goals and dreams. Note the steps necessary to accomplish your goals and dreams. Let's take about 5 minutes.
I ask you now to share those with one other person, preferably, again, one person that you don't know too well, and to share that part of the content of your dreams you feel comfortable with sharing. Share a bit of what you dream there, what you feel comfortable sharing. And in particular, also share a bit about what it feels like to dream for you. What does it feel like to dream? And what have you learned a bit about your life's goals, about your life's mission? Okay. Share a bit of the content, what it feels like to dream, and what you may have learned about your life's goals and mission. All right, let's take about 10 minutes to share with one other person.
Join back to the whole group, please.
Yeah, to be
it is occasionally, or maybe even often, true that the writing ends. The writing often ends before the time is up. I've never seen the talking end before the time is up. Never yet. What did you come up with?
What is it? Professional talker.
Professional talker.
That's it.
We found out we both like to touch people.
Right.
We don't have a workshop on that yet.
We don't put it anywhere.
We'll teach us.
You're on next week.
At the end, we figured out we were afraid to speak. We both had fears of dreaming because we were afraid that we would come up with goals that would be so neat that we could never obtain them.
Yeah, because I know for myself, I am very security conscious. And ideally, my dreams could be fulfilled by leaving my job now, and because I hate the city. I'm in L.A. and I hate it. And I'd love to come up here and live. This is seventh heaven to me. But to do that means giving up my job, means giving up security that... really hard for me to do.
Could you get a similar job again if you did?
Not up in a small city, not in a small town. I'm a personnel representative, and unless I probably went with a large firm, unless I went into something different like counseling or something along those lines, maybe it would be possible. It
have you ever thought of getting a job in Seattle? Then you could live. This is where I want to move to. It's painful, China. It's honest. All you do is take out the airline and get off the airline and you're right in the country. It's just super. So you could maybe work as a personal representative in Seattle and then live in Bainbridge. You'd be living in the country.
Or now you can take a bus right out of Issaquah, Washington, and visit the Lutheran Bible Institute. And visit classes there. Night school.
But we've really got all the people we need in Seattle.
Oh, come on! That's
supposed to be the way the problem people go.
Oh, yeah, we could get one more.
Thanks.
As long as it's a special one, like her.
One thing that was interesting for me was the choice I had to make which of those to write on. And I looked at the second question and decided if I were to die tomorrow, you know, but I found out I really didn't have any major goals. I was that were left in there. I wasn't unhappy. I'm very secure in my.
Well, I mean, I'm always trying to grow, but I'm not unhappy in my faith and my family and my job. And, you know, I never really thought about that. If I left things really truly undone, then I'm going to be paranoid about how I get them done. And it was very freeing to just say, all right, now I'll dream.
You learned to dream from that point.
From that point.
Ah. Can you share some of that?
Well, it's back to high school. I wanted, you know, the music degree, write good poetry. All those kinds of things that never really gone away. But it wouldn't be disastrous. Mm-hmm.
You're starting from a happy base.
Yeah,
dreaming is
really
on top of being
right.
Basically contented.
Right.
Okay. If you died tomorrow, it wouldn't hurt.
It really, I don't. No, I would have some regrets, mm-hmm. but not be remorseful. Mm-hmm. Things left undone. I won't. What?
The things that you're doing now that you enjoy, you would like to be here to enjoy longer.
Mm-hmm.
But not that you regret that you never did.
Yeah. That's the way it is today.
It's a hard act to follow, isn't it?
One of my dreams, the most important thing I think I had there, and it has to do with on the last day of my life, what would I have done or been there? Would have made my life satisfying, is to leave an impression on somebody, somewhere. I like working with you, Chris, to change somebody's life for the good, change that one kid from going over to the wrong way, kept him on the straight, narrow, and right path, whatever. not material goods. I don't want to, I want a family, but I don't want to have to, I don't want to work all my life for material goods, so leave my kids money and this. I'd rather have them see the good thing for my. That's most important to me.
I think we kind of shared that philosophy. One of my goals was to have affected someone for the good that their self-image would have altered because of contact. That also involved exposing them to, I guess, my interpretation of God's way for us, or their understanding of themselves, or the world around them.
What part of this would go under God's will for our life that we're thinking of?
Can you give us a tentative answer for that?
No, I'm asking you.
Let's ask the question again.
How do you know when you're dreaming and these goals are also working with God's plan in mind for you?
I'm no theologian. I can only answer for myself, and I expect somewhat tentatively. I feel I'm called to be the best I can be. I believe I've been given gifts and talents and dreams and wishes for a reason.
I believe there's a reason for what's happening to me. My vocation is that which God would want to be, to come from the best that I have been given for me. Okay? There are, I'm sure, other answers, but that's my answer.
The five rules I have for knowing God's will is in God's Word, in His prayer, the peace that you have in the Holy Spirit, your circumstances, and counsel with other Christians, and at least three of you should agree with them.
What was the last? Counsel?
Counsel of other Christians, and you should, three of you should agree. Talking with friends, through your prayer, through your devotion, through your circumstances, and the peace that you have. I'm going along with that, and I guess I'm not afraid to die, and my, if this was the last day of my life, I would want to know that the greatest desire of my heart is that all my children who have salvation and eternal life, and that we would all be together. I don't need any material things. I'd like to get rid of my material things. One time, it was fun getting one, but it's often hard to get rid of them.
Oh, I share your sense of desire for adventure and service. But also I have the problem, as you have, with giving up a certain sense of security that would have to be given up in order to do that. I'd love to sail the South Seas in a boat, and I'm a physician, and I'd like to, you know, set up some small clinics in different places. And unfortunately, in order to do that, I have to give up practices to get the funds to develop where I am right now. I'm not sure I want to do that.
It's a tough trade-off decision to make.
Is there a difference between security and being trapped? You know, at what point does security become?
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask. But you go. I think it's really dependent on when you take the sound security and get it out of proportion. You've got to look at what you're securing yourself against. And in your case, I don't think that you have to worry about security. Your time of life where you could make several changes.
I'm young, right? I get this all the time, too, though. I'm young. You have hair.
Yeah. I think you can come down far too hard on security when you're young.
Yeah.
Can you come down far too hard on security when you're older?
Yes.
Well, yes, you can. You can drive yourself down a rut that you hate being in, because you say, well, there's that much behind me, and there's only that much to go. I've got to maintain security. Becomes more important then, because the abyss is getting nearer.
See, we need to be more secure when we're closer to the edge, is that right?
Closer to the end,
or the abyss, the edge.
Well, I think you could, individually, reconsider this. Security becomes more important.
I often wonder at older people, if I may carry that out a little further. There seems to be a greater desire for security and that sort of thing, and yet I see amazing examples of people who at 40, 50, 60 have made tremendous changes in their life and risked great things, given up a lot of security, and I see incredible vitality and aliveness and in fact, I have a business partner who quit a very, very successful career, very secure, put his family and his business career in effect on the line to go into business to another fellow and I. And he went around the community. Many people knew him well. He had a high status job in the community. He went around the community and told people that he quit his job to go into this venture, which was unsure and was uncertain. And the reaction was overwhelmingly, oh, I wish I'd had the courage to do that. Oh, I'm so happy for you.
Well, my husband traveled, did very well. He retired. He planted around in some real estate for a while. he took a job, he was kind of a business administrator, a church administrator. And that was entirely different, and that was something that he wanted to accomplish. He had one year.
I think we can carry this a lot further. We're about out of time. I want to do two more things. I want to make a comment about what you have in your hands there for your piece of paper, and then I want to ask you to do about an evaluation. First of all, counselors who are of this ilk, let's say, on vocational counseling, that believe that wishes are more important than intelligence, aptitudes, and skills, say that what you have in your hands is a precious asset. You have some dreams. They suggest that you keep those, pin them in your office or on your refrigerator or on your wall near your desk or wherever it's handy, and work that list. Scratch off the things you accomplish. Add to the list. Change the list. They say that's your most precious asset, is that series of dreams you have about your life. So I'm going to suggest that you keep that piece of paper and see if you agree for you that that's a precious asset.